I have the great pleasure of introducing our speaker tonight, who I got to see when she was like probably brand new at my home group back in Santa Barbara, and watched her grow from wherever she was at when she got here to where she's at now. And I won't say any more because she's going to tell you all about it. And I'm really glad that you've come up here to share with us. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you. And
hi, I'm Sarah, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sarah.
I would thank Daniel for asking me to come speak, but he's not here, and it's really exciting to hear where he's at today. We got to know Daniel, I don't know how many years ago, and it was just such a gift to be able to watch him grow in the program. He grew pretty quick, like pretty fast, I thought. And anyway, that's I'm excited for him. And thank you, Billy, for leading the meeting and welcoming us. I think I met you in my early time in sobriety at my sponsor's house. And she's still my sponsor. And I want to thank my husband for coming up with me. We actually met, and I got sober in Santa Barbara, but we moved to Ventura about a year ago. It's been one of the gifts of sobriety is we became first-time homeowners, which is something that I didn't even have on a maybe someday list. It was like, that is never going to happen for me. So that was a real blessing. And to know that it's going to be okay, even if we like lost the house for whatever reason, we'll still be okay. And that's something I've learned here in these rooms is that that I'm okay and that things are okay no matter what. Do I always feel that way? No. So I wanted to just read a little caption out of the book, and it's from page 50 in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it says, "Here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power, and to do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements." That's been an experience. I've had the gift of experiencing that the power and peace, you know, flowing in. I came into these rooms when I was 14 years old. I had not been drinking or doing other stuff for very long in my life, but I ended up coming to some meetings with a friend of mine who was in the care unit, which was like a inpatient recovery unit in Goleta. And I thought it was really exciting to go to an AA meeting, to go see her in like rehab. And because I was attracted to alcoholics and addicts from the time I was a little girl. I grew up in a working class family that was very loving. And, you know, I just was always attracted to like deviant people, I guess you could say. And I wanted to be an alcoholic when I grew up. I didn't really know what that meant, but I remember seeing an after school special, and it was called Sarah, Portrait of a Teenage Alcoholic. And, you know, she was drinking alone, and she went to these meetings, and I just thought, wow, that's like so cool. And so when I ended up in the rooms, I thought I was cool. I thought you guys were cool. And I knew that I had a problem. Like, I knew that the way I drank and the way I wanted to drink was different. And so I knew that a solution existed here. I knew that I was powerless over alcohol. I don't know that I thought my life was unmanageable. I didn't believe in God. I didn't want to. I didn't know it could be something of my own understanding, even though I heard that being said in the rooms. And part of me kind of wanted to join up with you guys, but my parents were like, not super comfortable with me coming to AA meetings. I liked it because I could smell like cigarettes when I came home with an excuse. And and I stuck around for maybe a month or two. And so I knew that I was an alcoholic. I knew that there was a solution. And I figured that I would end up back here maybe someday if I didn't die or get institutionalized. But I didn't realize that this path that I had, you know, decided that I was going to stay on was going to take me where it took me. Now today I'm grateful for where it took me and where I'm at, because I feel like we have a special experience of not just going through hell, but coming out the other side. I came to believe in a power greater than myself when I was out there. And I really thought that I was going to be happy when I died. I thought I was going to be free when I died. I thought I came here to suffer, you know, because that is kind of my default, is self-pity, you know, somewhat depressive. But I had that belief in something bigger than myself when I came in here, which was really helpful. I had a few kids when I was out there. I don't want to spend too much time on my story before I got sober. I did other things. I was awake for, you know, several years at a time, and I didn't get sober through one of my pregnancies at all, and it was my lowest bottom that I experienced, but it was not my only bottom. And you know, I drank and drove. I drank, and you know, I was kind of like, I just wanted to hang out in the bars and shoot pool. I didn't have a lot of aspirations. I did show up to work usually, but I always had a lot of excuses why not to come in. And I would make up some really weird things why I wasn't at work so that you would believe me, because who would say that? And I got into trouble with my parents. I got arrested a few times, but nothing spectacular, I wouldn't say. But I didn't get sober because of my kids. You know, if I did, I would have gotten sober when I was pregnant, and I couldn't. I couldn't, and I was in the depths of my disease at that time. I wanted to stop, and part of me really, really wanted to stop. Everything in me knew that all that I was doing was horribly wrong. I experienced the shame, the terror, the bewilderment. I was terrified about what I was doing and how I was affecting those around me or in me. And at the same time, I am a self-centered, self-seeking alcoholic who wants to do what she wants to do when she wants to do it. And quite honestly, there was a big part of me that didn't want to stop, or else I probably would have gone somewhere and said, I need help. So my kids were 3 and 7 years old when I got sober. Things really went down the tubes. A day in the life was, I was drinking all around the clock. We moved from the Santa Barbara area to Fresno, and I was home with the kids. I was kind of like laundering money, you know, keeping secrets from my husband, doing other stuff every day, passed out on the couch, awake all night, you know, feeling like my kids were lucky because they got to stay home from school, because I could not get in the car and get them to school. And I justified it thinking, man, I wish my parents just like let me fake stay home sick. And I don't think that was their experience. But through a series of events, you know, it had not been working for me anymore. I was not getting that relief. I wasn't getting that freedom. I wasn't getting that peace that I found when I first started drinking. You know, I don't like to be uncomfortable. And when I took my first drink, I wouldn't say that I was a super uncomfortable child at that time. But I felt really comfortable when I took that first drink, and, you know, euphoric, all kinds of stuff. And I really liked that a lot. So to come in here and to not have the alcohol, you know, I'm pretty uncomfortable. I'm really uncomfortable. And there was a period of time after the birth of my first child when I was a dry drunk. I wasn't drinking, and I was just full of anxiety. I didn't even really know what anxiety was until that time. And I now know, I can look back and see that I was dry. I didn't have a solution. So I ended up, I was back at my parents' house. I was with my two kids. I'd left my husband. We were about to file bankruptcy, and I had sold my car to the drug dealer. And I'm at home, and I'm running out of everything. And I got drunk and came home, and I was going to kill myself. And I mean, I probably really wasn't, honestly, but that was a heavy thought. And something I'd really thought heavily about a lot of times, that I just can't do this anymore. But I said something that night, and my mom had just kind of put my kids to sleep, I think, and she was walking up to her upstairs bedroom, and she just barely heard me say that, you know, I'm going to kill myself. And that was my night of, like, surrender, I guess you could say. It was not the night of my last drink, but I needed a drink after that. I didn't realize how chemically dependent I had been on the alcohol. I ended up going into Project Recovery the following Monday. It was a Thursday night when that happened. And I went through their program, their outpatient program, and then a few months later I moved into Casa Serena, which is a recovery home in Santa Barbara. The day that I was supposed to move in there, or the day before I was supposed to move in there, I had filed for welfare before, and I got a check from welfare that was the exact amount I needed to move in there. Things like that started happening in my life where, you know, just things were kind of working out, I guess you could say. It still didn't feel like things were working out. The first year of my sobriety, I was so uncomfortable. I still felt suicidal. I didn't see how I was going to get up and be responsible for taking care of a few kids, get a job. I hadn't really worked a real job in a while. And just get through a day, you know. I ended up living at Casa Serena for about 2 years under their roof. I was at their main house, and then I went on to their program for moms and kids, and then I worked there as a house mother for a year. And during this time, I had gotten a sponsor. I was going to meetings. I started doing my steps. I got commitments, and it never occurred to me to not do what was suggested in this program. And I'm grateful I didn't think, like, oh, I don't really have to do this stuff. You know, I came in here to get what you guys had. And I worked the steps pretty slow and pretty haphazardly, but I was doing them. So, I don't know, when I was about a year sober, my kids have different fathers, which is a total shock, I'm sure. My older son was maybe going to go live with his dad, who had been estranged, and I was about to turn a year sober. I have my little wild child running around who by the doctor's assessment, he was fine, because I told them everything once I got sober. I know that he was affected by what was going on. I don't doubt that one bit. But anyway, I'm still a little bit self-centered. I'm still not completely embracing the parent thing, because I'd rather be at meetings all day and doing, you know, all that fun stuff in recovery. But I've got children at home, and I've got to learn how to balance my life. And there's a line in the book, and I actually didn't really see that until my husband and I was sitting in a book study with him, pointed out that a much more important demonstration is to be made in our respective homes and affairs or jobs or something like that. And I think I knew that. And I had also made that decision. Like, I'm not, I don't even think I could pick a good friend right now. I'm definitely not going to be dating. And that's not in our literature, but it is a suggestion. Today when I sponsor people, I don't tell people what to do. It's not my job. I truly believe that decisions are between that person and their higher power. If they want to start dating right away, if they ask me about it, I'll give them an opinion, but it's not my job to tell people how to live their lives, who to date, what to wear, that kind of thing. And I mean, that's what our book tells us at least. Anyway, so I was, my son left and he ended up, him and his father got in a car accident and his dad died in the accident. And I went down to see him at the hospital. And when I was driving down there, it took us like a ridiculous amount of time because of the traffic and stuff. We didn't really know. We knew he was okay enough to give us the phone number, but we didn't know what was going on with him. And, you know, when I drove into that town, I immediately spotted the dive bar. And I just remember this wonderful feeling coming over me, and it was a feeling of freedom, that I don't have to go there. That's not where I'm going to be spending my time, because that's exactly where I would want to be going. It's what I would be thinking about when I was in the hospital if I was still drinking. And everything that I had learned in Alcoholics Anonymous just kind of flowed in as far as, you know, you're powerless over this. Suit up and show up, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we actually, it was actually a really healing time for us because his little brother wasn't around. My parents watched him when Jordan was in the hospital, and it was just him and I. You know, there was no husband or drugs, alcohol. There just wasn't all that craziness there. And it was the first time I really realized how important and how special just being present is. And so that was a really healing time for us. And, you know, fast forward a few months, this may sound ridiculous, but I was a big metalhead through high school and for a bit or whatever. Not that I don't like it anymore, but I wouldn't call myself a metalhead anymore. Anyway, I hadn't been to very many concerts, shows, whatever, because I didn't ever want to spend the money. My parents didn't usually want me to go anyway. And so my brother had invited me to go see Metallica up in the Bay Area. And I was just like, I was so excited to go see them. And it was, to me, it was like a dream come true. And my son was home. His leg is, got a cast up to here on it. And I live at a home with other women, and I know that they'll watch him and take care of him. And my brother called, or I called him, and I just, this, I don't know where it came from, but I said, you know what, I need to stay home. It's just not the right thing for me to go to this concert. And it's making me emotional right now just because that was a really big deal for me, not to do what I wanted to do, but to do what I was supposed to be doing. And he didn't, you know, maybe know any different. And I probably did actually say something to him, like, you know, I'm not going to that concert, because that's the kind of person I was. I want you to know what kind of sacrifices I'm making for you. And it's been really hard letting go of all that ego-centered stuff. But, you know, my kids have been, it's been a really interesting path, because I also came to realize that I have a lot of anger and I have a lot of fear. That's where my anger stems from. And I noticed myself yelling at my kids or shaming them about what the way their room looks, the way they're not doing this or how they're whatever, this and that and the other thing. And it started to get really uncomfortable. I started not really feel okay about the things I was saying to them. And I liken it to like the drink, the alcohol, where it just wasn't really working for me anymore. And I found that to be true with these character defects, where something I'm doing starts to become painful. I start to become aware of it. And you guys, through the process of the steps, through the meetings, through listening to people, through hearing your experience, I got to start to see myself. And it took me a long time to realize in the program how self-centered I was. That first 4-step I did, I was like, well, it's all because of the alcohol, you know. It's, if I wasn't an active alcoholic, I wouldn't have been lying and doing, you know, manipulative and self-centered. It's just because I wanted to do what I wanted to do to do what I wanted to do, and I'm not doing that anymore, so I'm cool. And I wasn't cool. So it was really empowering for me to see these things I could work on, though, in that fourth column. Like, oh, this is something I can do something about. I didn't know how to turn anything over to God. I don't think I really let go of anything, like actually turned anything over to God for several years. I mean, I would say, like, I give this to you, God, but I'm not giving anything up here. This is like swirling with how am I going to fix it? What's going to happen? how am I going to make this happen, or I need to know what's going to happen. And I would get really caught up, very anxious, very fearful about what the day is going to bring, what tomorrow is going to bring, how am I going to provide for my children, how am I going to find a place to live, how am I going to get them to school. I just didn't have this feeling inside of me like everything's going to be okay. That was not happening for me. And it was through walking through, like people told me to do, put one foot in front of the other and just keep doing the next right thing. I was like, but what? I don't know what God's will is for me. So how do I do God's will? And it really was really disturbing if you're stuck in that place. And then at one point, I just kind of realized that, you know, there's probably a lot of things I could do that are the right thing. You know, like if I'm making a decision whether to take this job or to go to school, you know, like if I don't know the answer to it, probably either one of those is okay, because I'm not doing anything wrong. But when I make a decision that is not right, I feel it in here. Something doesn't sit right with me. And because I'm sober, I have the ability to sense that today. And so that's that. I finally, it was like so freeing to be like, oh, there's probably multiple things I could do that are okay. And it took me a really, really long time though to like feel that. I don't think I was probably like 5 or 6 years sober before I began to feel like the real freedom that I know today. I would see it in small things, like 7 days without a drink. You know, I just remember being absolutely blown away that I hadn't taken a drink for a week, you know, and I was a daily drinker. I didn't know how that was happening. I remember feeling free because I didn't have to lie about everything anymore. And there were a lot of things that were happening in my life that kept me coming around. And people said it was going to get better. I believed it, but I didn't totally. but I had enough faith, I guess you could say, in this process to stick around here. Mind you, during this time, I'd done my steps, but neither of my sponsors ever sat with me and read the book. I'd gone to big book studies like sporadically. So I might go in and it might be even a big book study where they just pick a part of the book. I'd never gone through the book from the front to the end ever, like studying it. I never treated it like a textbook. 6 years sober, I was invited. I'm kind of jumping around, I guess. I went back to school when I was 2 years sober, and it was one of the first big things I did that I was, I feel like I was being pushed by somebody to do. And today I believe it was my higher power. I just had this really strong feeling like, go get educated, go learn more. Mm-hmm. And I was working full time, and I quit that job. And for me, just driving up and parking on the campus was terrifying, let alone registering for classes, let alone showing up for a class and sitting in a class. I was driven by fear at school, and it served me well. I ended up doing really well, mm-hmm. and I set some expectations for myself accidentally. When I started doing well, I was like, wow, I want to keep doing well. And every time I'd get a syllabus, I would start crying, mm-hmm. and I just didn't ever see how I'm going to do this. I can't do this. Like, everything was like a catastrophe. Everything was just ginormously difficult to overcome. And so, but I kept putting one foot in front of the other. I kept going to class. I learned in this program that even like if I'm going through a rough time up here, that when I go show up somewhere else, that settles down. I used to like, let's say a boyfriend breaks up with me or something. I'm going to sit at home and just think about it. Just be angry. Just be sad. Just be this and that and the other thing. And I call in sick to work because I'm so distraught. And I didn't know I was making it worse by not showing up for my life. Not only not showing up for my life and thinking about things, but then being an irresponsible person on top of it. And so that was also a really big thing for me to learn, you know, that just showing up, even when I don't feel good, is it pays off. I was like, wow, who would have known, you know? Anyway, so I had gone back to school and I really just went there to learn. I didn't go there to like earn more money or anything. And somehow I'm all of a sudden applying to UCSB, which is, I mean, I grew up partying out in that town as a little high school kid, never knowing anything about the actual university, never having any intentions of becoming educated. That was way too scary, and I didn't ever really care for school a lot anyway. So I ended up out at UCSB and almost dropped out my first quarter there because I got like a C or an F on a test. And I was like, I can't do this, you know. I just the conversations I was hearing out there, you know, I'm an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. You know, so one day I'm like way better than you and the next day I suck compared to you. And that can go throughout the day, you know. I'm always measuring myself against you. I finally learned, and I talk a lot with people I sponsor about, you know, where's your measuring stick? Where are you putting that measuring stick? Are you putting it in front of somebody else, or is it with God, you know? Today, I try to use God as my measuring stick. I don't always do that. I don't always measure up. But I try to practice because when I allow my higher power to be my measuring stick, I am 100%. You know, I'm always accepted. I'm loved. And I have a very loving God. And who knows all the mistakes I'm going to make and all the everything that's happening in my life. Anyway, so I'm out at UCSB. I get invited to a book study. And there are mostly other UCSB students who are in the program. They're mostly much younger than me in age. And they're also mostly much younger than me in sobriety date. And I went out there and I was just, you know, I was just blown away by studying this book. And we highlighted the actions. We highlighted the promises. We highlighted direction, which I guess is the same as the action. And we highlighted prayers. And suddenly it just like all started making sense to me. Like, wow, this is a really simple recipe to follow. And I had started at this time, you know, I'm about 6 years sober. I've walked through things terrified and I've seen things didn't fall apart. Things came together. Mm-hmm. Things have come together beautifully for me. And even when they didn't come together beautifully, I learned something from them. They've been opportunities for me to grow, to look at something I need to work on, whether it is how, you know, what my reliance is on my higher power or, you know, how I'm doing something. And so my recovery, I would say, really took off at that time. I hadn't really been asked to sponsor people that much before that point, except for a few people who just needed a sponsor for a sponsored namesake. And people started asking me to sponsor them. And that was scary. And I found it to be, like they talk about in our book, you know, it's a bright spot. And being able to pass along my experience and how I did this has it just would every time I meet with somebody, it lightens up my recovery. It reminds me of what I'm supposed to be doing. It reminds me of what this program has done for me. And all this whole time, I've always had commitments at meetings. I've always gone to meetings. I've also tried to maintain that balance in my home. You know, there was a lot of things I wanted to do in recovery that I didn't do because I knew it was important for me to be there for my kids. And I didn't do very well at the whole, like, involving them and everything. I just didn't know how to do that too well. So I had chosen not to get in a relationship that first year. I think around 2 years, I dated somebody in the program for a minute. I was still living at the Oliver House. It was, like, super awkward, getting dropped off by a certain curfew, and, like, I have my kids, and, I mean, it was just really weird. And, you know, they talk about green lights, red lights, and it was just red light. You know, this is too hard. And I tried again when I was 5 years sober with a normie, I guess you call him, and that also just didn't really feel comfortable. So, you know, 7 years later, I'm like, come on, God. But in the meanwhile, you know, I'm thinking I'm my purpose is to be there for my kids. That experience in the hospital, and I also got to take them to the Betty Ford for a family program, and that was also really healing for us. But I, what was I going to say? Totally lost my train of thought.
Kids and
12 kids and
years.
Dating. so I got to be there for my kids. I was going to school. I mean, I had enough on my plate anyway. But I go to a Saturday night meeting, and it was a meeting I often went to. And I often went to meetings just to see a cute guy or something like that. I mean, if that's the reason I went there, fine. And so this guy was taking a 3-year cake. And I had been one of the little 5-minute speakers for the Santa Barbara Action Participation Meeting, and we caught each other's eyes. And anyway, this is guy right here. I'd never seen him in the rooms down there before, and he had just moved to Lompoc. And I'm working my butt off at school. I'm in my, I think, second to last. I don't remember even now if it was quarters or semesters out there, quarters. And we started dating, and I was like, I don't know how this is going to work, because he lives in Lompoc. He's got 4 kids. And, like, I don't even have time to do anything. Like, I don't know how we would even see each other. And a gentleman who was in my book study who knew both of us, you know, he's like, oh, so-and-so. We didn't think it was going to work for us, and it has. And I think we took it pretty slowly. I know I took it really slowly for, like, how quick I usually would move. And but we, you know, we just started seeing each other. And there was a connection. And, you know, we sat in book studies together, and I got to see the book in a way I've never experienced it before. And it was really exciting to me, and we both knew to honor our relationships as parents. And I'm sure that there was times where we weren't completely honoring that because of our relationship. And I brought up the red light, green lights, because looking back, I think, you know, there was times when maybe there was a red light for us, and, you know, I didn't see the light. And, you know, it's like when you go through an intersection and you're like, did I just run a red light? And you're not really sure. But there you are. You're on the road. Oh, wow. And so it's been, I also had an opportunity, which I didn't realize at that time when we started dating, like, whoa, there's all kinds of stuff that's, that comes up, at least for me, that, like, I needed to work on. I remember feeling like a total victim. All he was doing was, like, leaving, going home, because it was time to do the adult thing and leave. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm being abandoned, because that's how I treated relationships. Like, you're leaving me. And I remember crying one time, and he's told me that really scared him. Like, whoa, what's wrong with this one? But I also remember calling him up and saying, you know, or we sat in the car one time, and I said, you know, I have some stuff coming up, and I know, like, intellectually, I know that this is, has nothing to do with what took place, but my reaction to it is there. And so, and I would say it's still there sometimes. I still have reactions that are unreasonable. And it's been really, truly an honor to grow alongside you. I've seen this guy grow so much as a parent, as a man in recovery, and as my husband. He's made a lot of changes, and I'm not very good at acknowledging them, honestly. It's easier for me, for some reason, to do it on a public forum. it's called withholding, I've learned. And I don't know what that's about, but that's one of those things I get to work on. But I really, really appreciate being able to have a partner who is in the program, who understands what we do, who's doing what we do. And, you know, at times it kind of sucks when, you know, you think, like, oh, if there was somebody that wasn't in the program, they wouldn't really know what I'm supposed to be doing. but anyway, Yeah, and so he was there when I graduated UCSB, and we got married after I graduated grad school. I went on to grad school, which I had not planned to do, and that was quite a journey. You know, all I can say is, like, I've been growing as a person, like, in school and then in recovery, and I just feel really grateful that I've had this experience. So much has happened for me that I never could have imagined. Just, you know, becoming educated, we got a house. I remember when I got a car. I mean, it was a really, really big deal for me. I'd never had a car. I've never had a garage. I never had a washer and dryer. You know, and these are things that are bonus, you know, because I'm also, the real gift is that spiritual growth, you know, I lived on Section 8 with my two children. My kids were going to schools where I thought everybody had a house and they were all married. You know, I'm sure that wasn't the case, but, and I compared myself a lot to them, but I became comfortable living in that apartment with what we had, with what we didn't have. And that was a real blessing, because anything that's come along after that has been, you know, bonus. I wanted to share real quickly also, you know, I was like a blue collar worker. I came from like a blue collar worker family. When I go to weddings or other places, I often feel more comfortable with the wait staff than I do with the people that are at the party. And I don't know what that's about, but Alcoholics Anonymous has given me the gift of becoming comfortable with people that I didn't used to be comfortable with. To dressing for work today. I used to wear like a uniform to work or whatever. And, you know, I had to start wearing like clothes to work. And and it was uncomfortable. It was uncomfortable for me. And to advocate for myself. And I share some of that because, you know, I used to be afraid to ask for a raise. I don't think I ever asked for a raise when I was in my disease. I wasn't worth it. And I certainly wasn't proving that either. You know, I wasn't showing up to work enough to say, hey, I need a raise. And so I applied recently for a position that I didn't think I was suited for, that I didn't think I was going to get the position, but I wanted to do the work around it. Because I've learned in here, you have to suit up and show up and take action. And I've learned that taking action has led to results. And so I decided I wanted to interview and practice interviewing. And so I worked my ass off, a little bit of a perfectionist maybe. And I studied really hard to do this interview. And and I got the job. And I share this because, you know, there's a part of me, I got sober in 2002, and, you know, it's been 16 years that I've been sober, and I'm still just absolutely blown away by the gifts that this program has given, because I don't really know sometimes who that person is who got that job. And the person also that not only got this job and wanted and thought, it's time to be terrified. It's time to be afraid. Because I was going to be in a supervisorial position. And I've never supervised anybody. And I wasn't. I wasn't afraid when I walked out of the interview. I wasn't afraid when I got the job. Because I know today, like, anything is possible. Anything is possible in this program. And that even if I fail in this position utterly, that I will have done my best. And I went into that position not totally caring for a few of the people I was going to be supervising, and I changed that around. I opened my heart up, and I wanted to come in there without any judgment. I want to be helpful. You guys have taught me how to be of service and how to be helpful. And so I went in there with God. And some stuff has happened since then, and I mean, things are going along actually really well, but I think but I had an experience, and I want to share this really quickly because I'm not perfect. And a few months before I'd gotten this position, somebody I supervise now had heard me say something to another person that was not nice about her. And I like to think I'm not a gossiper. I like to think I don't, you know, do character assassination, but I have to be really honest with myself, not just because I got caught, but when this whole thing came around, I felt this relief, like, God's giving me an opportunity to work on this. And not that I haven't worked on it before. And it was one of those character defects that I wasn't really wanting to let go of in the very beginning, because I thought it makes me more interesting when I talk about other people. And there is that sense of superiority that I know I feel, that my ego gets stroked, whatever it is. I also know today that it doesn't feel good inside anymore. I think it feels good for a minute, but it really doesn't feel good. It's not filling me up. You know, I learned in here, the way I feel good is by doing good things for other people, by treating others kindly. And it wasn't kind. And I didn't know that she had heard me until right before I started my new position where I was going to be supervising her. And on Friday, I got to make amends to her. And she was really hurt by what I said. She called me unprofessional. And I said, you're right. It was. And you'll never hear that again. And so it's humbling for me to realize, you know, I'm not perfect. And right away I'm thinking, man, you are supposed to be an example of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because some of the people that I work with know I'm in the program. And that's not the example I want to be today. I really feel responsible for being, I don't know what the word is, steward or example, I guess, of this program that has given me so much. It's been an experience for me, and again, it's an opportunity for me to change, to look, to reflect, to amend, you know, and to do differently. And to be aware. And you guys have made me more aware of more things than I ever wanted to know about myself. Anyway, I still have a sponsor today. I still go to meetings. We go to a book study. I still work with women. Today, I actually work up here part-time. It's been a gift to be able to go to meetings in different areas that I am. excuse me. My children, I just wanted to say also, that little boy that I was not sober when I was growing him, he's 20 years old today. And when I was 6 years sober, around the time of that book today, I guess, I had, you know, there's that part in the promises where it says we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And I had made a big mistake of writing a paper in my psychology class about fetal alcohol effects. And I spiraled out of, I mean, just total self-pity, fear, what have I done to him? You know, just, you know, like if you study any kind of psychology, suddenly everything in there is applicable to the situation. And it was serving nobody. It was serving nobody. And I sat in that meeting, and I realized that my purpose is to be of service to him and to be present for him, not to be in fear of what happened, what might happen, or what's going on with him to fix. And he's had a little bit of a rough path, but I know today that he has a higher power, and I'm not it, and all I can do is suit up and show up and be of service. I don't try to run my children's lives anymore. I try to guide them, and my sponsors taught me that. You know, my sponsors taught me that I'm there to guide them. I'm not there to control what they're doing. So I don't have to regret the past anymore. And I'm really grateful that that shift has taken place. I have a good relationship with my children today. And we have an extended family, and there's been a lot of challenges along the way, but I see the clock. He's staring at the clock for me. We've had a lot of challenges, but there's just been a lot of room to grow, and a lot of opportunities to love. And thank you again for coming up here, and I really appreciate you guys being here. And I'm really grateful to be sober, and you know, I suggest reading the book and studying it like a textbook. And I'm just going to read one more thing and then I'll shut up. Here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe that a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power and to do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary... Oh, I already read this part, huh?
It's still good.
It is still good. I'll just read this one. I usually read something else, but I'll just finish this off because it is really powerful.
Yes.
To take a certain attitude toward that power and to do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Let's give Sarah another round of applause.